Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly. Courtroom dramas. Former President Donald Trump is back before a judge in Manhattan, while another of his cases is argued before the Supreme Court. We have the latest. Invited guest. Why Pope Francis could be headed to the United States in September. Turmoil in Haiti. What's next for the Caribbean nation after the resignation of its prime minister? And laying it on the line. A look at the faith journey of a likely first-round pick in tonight's NFL draft. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Mark. Our top story tonight, former President Donald Trump sat inside of a Manhattan courtroom facing state criminal charges while in D.C. His lawyers were before the U.S. Supreme Court arguing presidential immunity. The justices will decide whether the former president can be prosecuted for his efforts to overturn the 2020 election. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us outside the nation's highest court. Eric.
Good evening, Tracy. This is a monumental case which tests the boundaries of presidential power. It will likely be the last case the justices will hear this term, but will have far-reaching effects on the former president's three other criminal cases and the November 2024 presidential elections. Since yesterday afternoon, armed with sleeping bags and chairs, people started lining up to ensure a spot inside the U.S. Supreme Court for the oral arguments. By sunrise, others gathered quickly.
Nobody should be immune to crime. Nobody. Not the president, not me, nobody.
I came here because America can do 10 times better, 10x better than what we have now. If we get rid of Biden and we put in the Trump's policies like we have before, America can do 10x better.
The former president's attorney arguing Trump cannot be prosecuted for his efforts to overturn the 2020 election due to presidents having absolute immunity from criminal prosecution for any official acts he took as president. Trump claims his acts that day were official conduct as he tried to ensure election integrity. His legal team also argues that all presidents must have that immunity, otherwise no leader can function in office and would always be looking over their shoulder, worried by criminal prosecution from political enemies.
You have an indictment in this case that goes right to the heartland of the president's powers, that alleges a whole series of official acts and tries to tie them together by saying, well, there's a private aim or a private purpose in that case. And that's a situation which, of course, could be alleged in virtually any indictment.
The Trump team also argued the Supreme Court and other courts cannot review the official acts of a president based on separation of powers principle. For Special Counsel Jack Smith's office, all this is simple. Presidents are not above the law, and if they commit crimes, they must be prosecuted.
His novel theory would immunize former presidents for criminal liability for bribery, treason, sedition, murder, and here, conspiring to use fraud to overturn the results of an election and perpetuate himself in power. Such presidential immunity has no foundation in the Constitution.
The timing here is critical when the court decides its case. It could determine if the former president stands trial or is immune. The court typically issues its final opinions at the end of June, just 4 months before the 2024 presidential election. Outside the U.S. Supreme Court, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, to discuss this case, let's bring in Christy Parker, counsel at Protect Democracy. She leads litigation to secure accountability for abuses of executive power and interference with government functions. Christy, thank you so much for coming on today. We really appreciate it. First, what stood out to you about the arguments today?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I think what stood out to me was that this really was an argument in the highest court of our land about whether or not the president of the United States is subject to the laws just like everyone else, or whether there are special rules that apply to the president. And I think, as we all know, you know, our system of government was founded on the principle that we have a president and not a monarch. So that question of whether the president of the United States is above the law really goes to the heart of whether that founding principle can be realized.
And the justices today, they really seem to kind of drill down on the question of whether the president was acting in a private capacity or in his official capacity. Can you talk to us more about that, explain the differences, and why this really matters?
Sure. So, yes, there was a lot of concern expressed today about making sure that the president of the United States, who is the, you know, the highest official in the executive branch of our government and who's charged with all of federal law enforcement, has the ability to exercise his or her legitimate powers without excessive concern about being constrained by, you know, bad faith actors in the legal process. And there was a particular concern expressed over what is the line between official actions, legitimate official actions of the president, and what are private actions. And no one expressed any sympathy for the idea that the president should have immunity for actions that are purely private or personal actions. The argument really boiled down to some questions around where do we draw the line between personal and official, and even beyond that, might there be some sort of a carve out, a narrow universe of official acts that are not prosecutable, as opposed to the wider range of official acts which every other federal official is subject to prosecution for if they intentionally violate the law.
Yeah, we're almost out of time, but I want to bring this up. Something that really stood out to us is what Justice Gorsuch said. He said that we are writing a rule for the ages. What do you think he meant by that?
Well, he seemed to be expressing some concern that they would be writing a rule that needed to anticipate all possible permutations of violations of the law by the president. And I think some of the other justices and the assistant special counsel wanted to really bring this back to the case in front of the court. Because really, in 234 years, we've never seen a prosecution of a former president. And that is largely because we have never seen actions by a former president like the ones that we saw by former President Trump, who was president at the time, in this case. So the question really came, one serious question that we have here is whether the court is going to try to look beyond this case and fashion a rule that applies to hypothetical situations, or whether they're going to just keep their eyes on the case directly before them and make a determination whether the actions Mr. Trump is accused of were official or personal.
Well, Christy, thank you so much for coming on and weighing in. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Former President Trump watched today as a tabloid publisher took the stand in a New York courtroom. This marks the third day of witness testimony in Trump's hush money trial. And with a rematch for the Oval Office between President Joe Biden and former President Trump well underway, the trial forced Trump to spend another day in court instead of on the campaign trail.
My constitutional rights have been taken away from me. Every respected scholar has said this is no case. There is no case here. This is just a political witch hunt.
President Joe Biden responds to the Middle East hostage crisis, telling EWTN News Nightly about his meeting with one of the youngest former captives. All this comes as the United States joins forces with other countries in appealing to Hamas to free the remaining victims. White House correspondent Owen Jensen was the only reporter who questioned the president this morning, and he is here now with more. Owen.
That's right, Tracy. As President Joe Biden was leaving the White House today and heading towards Marine One, I was able to ask him about his Oval Office meeting yesterday with little four-year-old Abigail Edan. Now, you'll recall she is the American girl who was held hostage in Gaza for several weeks at the start of the war and obviously since released. I also asked the president about another hostage still being held. And here's the video of that interaction from the top.
Mr. President, how was your meeting with Abigail? Can you talk about your meeting with Abigail a little bit? So we're told that you met with Abigail, the little girl that was held hostage. Abigail, you met with Abigail the other day, the, yeah. the little girl. How did that go?
That went really well. Her dad sent me, her family sent me a note saying she was riding home. She said, you know, I love Joe Biden.
We're told that she did a lot of playing. She did. And have you seen her? Can you discuss that a little bit? Was she outside, inside? She was playing a lot?
Oh, she was. We had her on the swings. She was swinging around in the Oval Office. She was really good.
And have you seen the video of the hostage, Hearst Goldberg Poland, with the missing arm? Have you seen that video of that hostage?
I haven't, but I know about it. I haven't seen it.
As you just heard, the president also responded to a new video released by Hamas about Israeli-American hostage Hearst Goldberg Poland, which seems to show he survived the October 7th attack. It's not clear when the video was taken. Now, several countries, including the U.S., are teaming up, appealing to Hamas to release the remaining hostages. Their joint statement says in part, "We emphasize that the deal on the table to release the hostages would bring an immediate and prolonged ceasefire in Gaza that would facilitate a surge of additional necessary humanitarian assistance to be delivered throughout Gaza and lead to the credible end of hostilities." Later, President Biden spent part of the day in Syracuse, New York, Micron Technology, celebrating a new $6 billion deal to build a campus of computer chip factories made possible in part with government support.
These new brand new facilities are going to produce the most sophisticated, powerful, leading edge memory chips in the entire world.
Also tonight, on the economic front, the nation's economy, the GDP slowed sharply last quarter to a 1.6% annual pace, but consumers are still spending. The president said in a statement that GDP numbers reveal a strong economy with stable growth, but while also acknowledging costs are too high for working families. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
An interfaith memorial was held in Washington, D.C. earlier today for the 7 aid workers killed in an Israeli airstrike. The founder of World Central Kitchen, Chef Jose Andres, led a reflection.
In the worst moments, the best of humanity shows up. Saif, John, Jacob, Somi, Jim, James, and Damien, they were the best of humanity. Their example should inspire us to do better.
Various faith leaders were also in attendance, including the Archbishop of Washington, D.C., Cardinal Wilton Gregory. The aid workers were killed on April 1st when strikes from an Israeli drone hit vehicles in their convoy as they left a warehouse on a food delivery mission. Pro-Palestinian protesters and mass arrests are rocking college campuses across the U.S. This was a scene at Emory University in Atlanta. Police used pepper spray and rubber bullets as they arrested protesters. The head of the Georgia NAACP is calling for a meeting with the university president. The college campus demonstrators are protesting the death toll in Gaza and U.S. military aid to Israel. Well, the New York Court of Appeals has overturned the 2020 rape conviction of former award-winning Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein. The 72-year-old disgraced Hollywood mogul will now face a new trial. The Court of Appeals ruled that the judge in the initial trial made improper rulings that were prejudiced against Weinstein. A lawyer representing several of Weinstein's accusers called the appeals court decision a step backward for those seeking justice for sexual violence. Reports say Pope Francis is considering a visit to the United States in September. According to a French newspaper, the United Nations invited the Holy Father to be a speaker at its General Assembly in September. The news has not yet been confirmed by the Vatican. The Pope already has a busy schedule for an apostolic journey in September. Pope Francis appeared before the UN in September of 2015 during his last trip to the U.S. Well, right now, Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in China.
And the relationship between whether you're Chinese, whether you're American, I think you know that this relationship between China and the United States is one of the most consequential, one of the most complicated in the world. But where the balance really comes in, we can make sure that we are talking to each other, hearing each other, understanding each other.
While the Biden administration is trying to stabilize its relationship with China, part of Blinken's trip will be devoted to severing economic ties in an area deemed as a threat to American interests. Well, the prime minister of Haiti is stepping down as the Caribbean nation deals with months of prolonged gang violence. Ariel Henry presented his resignation in a letter. A transitional council is stepping in to try and stabilize the violence-ravaged nation. In the meantime, Economy and Finance Minister Patrick Beauvois will step in as interim prime minister. Violence has been ratcheting up since gangs launched coordinated attacks in the capital back in February. Dad, we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including troubling data. A record low number of babies were born in the United States in 2023. We take a look at the numbers, and we speak with the leader of a Catholic organization helping to form modern-day saints in the workplace. Back in one of the most significant environmental actions to date, the Environmental Protection Agency has finalized rules aimed at cracking down on power plant pollution. It will put strict controls on the carbon dioxide emissions at existing coal plants and new natural gas power plants. The rules will also require safer disposal of toxic wastewater and coal ash. The new regulations will likely be challenged in court. A startling new data finds that the number of births in the United States hit its lowest level in more than 40 years. According to the CDC, just under 3.6 million babies were born in 2023. That is around 76,000 fewer births than the previous year. Birth rates had been declining for more than a decade before the pandemic, but did go up for two straight years afterwards. However, last year, birth rates fell for all women younger than 40 and leveled out for those in their 40s. Well, the annual Young Catholic Professionals Conference kicks off in Dallas tomorrow, and this year's theme is Workers in the Vineyard. The three-day event is expected to be the largest yet, with 750 attendees. Keynote speakers include Harrison Butker, kicker for the Super Bowl champions, the Kansas City Chiefs. There are also mentorship sessions and opportunities for prayer, community building, and formation. And here with more on the festivities is the founder and executive director of Young Catholic Professionals, Jennifer Baugh. Jennifer, so good to be with you today. We appreciate it. So tell us more about this year's conference.
Oh, we're so excited. It's a wonderful theme about bringing our faith into the everyday, into each moment of our lives. I mean, just the room is going to be filled with vibrant Catholics from all over the nation. And I think it's really helpful for us to learn practical ways to be bold witnesses of the faith.
And I want to talk about the theme, Workers in the Vineyard. What's the significance there? Why did you choose that?
Well, we chose every year we have a saint and a particular kind of book that we use to pull from. And so we chose Saint Jose Maria Escrivá this year. He really is known for helping us kind of sanctify the ordinary moment and really bring our faith into the public square. And so God needs us. He needs, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. And so this conference is really going to kind of rally us to be those laborers in the vineyard of the Lord.
Yeah, and Jennifer, what do you hope participants in this year's conference, what do you hope they get from it?
I really hope they walk away with the conviction to really be unafraid to witness to Christ. And that can look different for different people. We all have different callings. But in every single moment, we can witness to our Lord, whether it's, you know, simply praying before a meal with coworkers, or it's the way we actually approach our workday with a sense of desire to be faithful to God and use our gifts to the best of our ability. But I hope people feel a sense of animation for their everyday, that they're not called to live passively, but that God really wants us to be active participants and, in a sense, collaborators with Him.
Yeah, and I know this year's event, it's a little bittersweet for you. Tell us why.
It is, but really more sweet than bitter. So I've been so blessed to be the leader of this apostolate for 14 years. And the ministry is at such a beautiful place right now, really in an excellent position. So we have determined that it's time for YCP to experience its first leadership succession. So I will be stepping down as executive director. I'll be stepping into a new role as advisor and board member. And Peter Blute, who has dedicated 10 incredible years of his life to this mission, will succeed me on May 1st.
Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for coming on and talking about all of this. And thank you for all that you've done. We appreciate it. God bless.
Thank you so much.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, protection plan. Learn more about the Catholic faith of an offensive lineman and likely first-round pick in tonight's NFL draft. Star Joe Alt is following in his father's footsteps in many ways, including playing on the offensive line as his dad did. And tonight in Detroit, he is set to be drafted in the first round, just like his father was back in 1984. However, there is one slight deviation. When Joe was deciding on college, he decided against going to his father's alma mater, the University of Iowa, which offered him a football scholarship. Instead, Joe picked Notre Dame, saying that he had attended Catholic middle school and high school and wanted to go to a Catholic college as well. And joining us now to talk more on the likely first-round pick and his faith journey is his offensive line coach at Notre Dame, Joe Rudolph. Joe, great to be with you today. For those who may not be following Joe's football career, tell us a little bit more about him and why you think an NFL team would pick him in the first round. What's so special about him?
Well, I think the first thing you see is a maturity level that's well beyond his years. Came in as a true freshman, ended up starting the majority of the season, rolled into a second season, was an All-American, and followed that up with another All-American season. And, you know, agility combined with size, combined with approach, leadership style, kind of the whole package is a rare thing to find.
Yeah, and I know that his Catholic faith is really special to him. Can you talk to us more about that and how that plays, you know, into his role as a football player as well?
Absolutely. I think managing through college and becoming your best isn't easy to do at any level, especially with the pressure on these young men. But I think, like, Joe really leaned into his faith, leaned into what Notre Dame's all about, and I think it really helped him on his journey.
Yeah, and I know as a coach, I mean, you're also really, you know, you're a mentor to these players. What advice have you given Joe, and what do you hope that he takes with him when he leaves Notre Dame?
Well, big thing today was when I talked to him was just enjoy the day. You know, there's a lot of things that can happen, but take time to enjoy it with your family, with your mom, dad. Like, those moments don't come back. And I think, like, Joe's very smart, and he adapts well. And so, like, he'll take that with him. He understands not everything on that journey is going to be perfect, but he's got all the toolkit to be able to overcome those instances and to be the best him. So I'm excited for him, and I think the team that gets him should be really excited.
Yeah, it's really exciting time. And I know, Joe, you know, you've been a coach and a collegiate and professional football player. How has your faith helped you in your career, and how has it enabled you to help others like Joe?
I think it applies every day, you know, not the road or path isn't always clear. You know, it isn't always easy to see, but, like, you trust in your faith. You trust in the hard work you put in and the people around you. And more times than not, that it, you know, a light shines on that path as you work through the issues and you find your way. And so it's always been with me on my journey. It's always given me strength and it gives me the strength each day to do just that, put a great day together and follow it with another one.
Yeah, it's so important. I want to get back to Joe here for a minute. You know, as he moves on from Notre Dame and goes into the NFL, what will you remember most about him?
I think his humbleness, you know, like for a player that had three different offensive line coaches during his journey, he wasn't afraid to learn. He wasn't afraid to challenge himself, to get uncomfortable with techniques and approaches. And I think that'll help him immeasurably. You know, he's going to be asked to do some things he hasn't done. And I think his approach to that will be exceptional. And I think it'll be what I remember about him, like a guy that's a first team All-American in every way coming in and just goes right back to work and how he relates to his teammates, how he leads. Like, he's got a real humble nature, but he has earned the trust of the guys around him and really developed into an outstanding leader for us.
Well, Joe, thank you for coming on and speaking to us about Joe Alt. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much. God bless.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.